He's talking gibberish, Steve. I'm still not sure what he meant.
For a new Ford, make it Bill Curry, Tampa Bay's first family of Ford for over 60 years. At Bill Curry, our prices are better than good. They're the best. Located on Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Bucks fans, welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring, yes, he is the man, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the king of Pasco County, America's columnist, Tampa Bay's only Hall of Fame voter, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. Sage, we're all fired up, and of course, we're always presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's very first family of Ford, featuring a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Get over to GM Sean Sullivan, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, lots going on. Let me turn this to you, Sage, first. Unless there's something pressing on your mind, I wanted to ask you what you thought of Jason Light sitting down with the media, getting a little reflective, feelings about what he had to say.
You know, it's a special time of the year when you hear from Joel Glazer and Jason Light within a three-day span. That doesn't happen very often. You know when it happens, Lee? When they're hiring another coach. Not when they're firing a coach. Yeah. You know, firing a coach, that's like, hey, Jason, get out there in the press conference. When they hire a coach, everybody's happy. They're all on the same page. And, hey, Lee, if you can't all get together and be visible during Super Bowl, you know, you might as well go back into the catacombs. We have not heard much from Jason Light. It was refreshing to hear him talk. He is a humble sort, Lee, whatever you think. He is humble. And he said himself, Lee, for people that think we're too rough on this podcast and on the website, Lee, did he or did he not say himself that he has made a ton of mistakes in the past and he would like to own up to them? And he thinks he's well on the way to making up for some of them. But he certainly doesn't dispute that he has learned from a ton of mistakes, Lee. That's kind of refreshing for a general manager to say.
Not only is it refreshing, but I give him credit. I mean, he came out and said it. It wasn't like someone prompted him to say that. Hey, look, I made a lot of mistakes. To me, it came across as a thank you card to the Glazer family for letting him stick around as long as he has. And I think he sort of admitted other owners would have said, hey, you're out. We're changing course. What bums me out about when White does these press conferences, and you know him, obviously, Ira, and Steve knows him as well. We've dealt with him several times, you know, away from the Klieg likes of TV. He's really a good dude, really down-to-earth guy, almost gregarious at times, just a really good guy. That never comes across on TV, on video, because he gets so tensed up, so tight, so almost paranoid. And I guess he's scared that he's going to slip up and say something wrong. And what you see and what you hear from him in interviews, you know, whether it be radio, whether it be, you know, YouTube videos, podcasts, whatever, press conference, that's not him. That's not him at all. He's like three times as more gregarious. And every once in a while it comes up, he's almost a bad interview because he's so tensed up. Which people get to see the real Jason Light because he's really, you know, a great guy to talk to and hang around and BS with. Oddly enough, he's doing a lot of appearance, not just talking to Bucks media. He's doing a lot of appearance. He did Peter King's podcast, which was about a half-hour spot. Yeah, it was very refreshing for him to admit his mistakes. And how many ownership groups would keep a guy that fired two coaches and decided to move on his number one overall draft pick of a quarterback? Not many. And I kind of believe that's because that Light was convinced he could get Arians. And I don't know if Light's here if that wasn't the case.
I think it's only a matter of a day or two before he goes on with Peter Schrager, who was one of the great Light aficionados in the media world. Steve, here's a point about Light that I think we should all address. One of the subtle aspects, I think, of this season is maybe a reconsideration of Light's tenure, maybe the last 3 years or so. Now, look, I'm not going to make any excuses for the kicking situation. It's been atrocious, and that's on Jason Light. He couldn't find a kicker. He tried, and he tried, and he couldn't find one. And it cost the Bucks football games. Absolutely football games. But Steve, here's my point. He went out of his way to salute Arians coaching staff, and I think with good reason, because Lee knows the word that I'm leading up to, which is development. And you look at Ronald Jones, Evan White, Alex Kappa, Whitehead, Carlton Davis, all of a sudden, Vita Vea, maybe some of the early foibles were, a bad coaching staff before Arians came to town. It's really come to fruition this year. And some of the guys that we thought were bum picks, they look like very good picks. And we always ask the question, how do you quantify the coaching in the equation? Otherwise, or are these just guys that are never going to make it with any team? It was just a bad pick. And Steve, I think this is kind of an indication that, yeah, coaching matters, Steve, in getting the most out of these young players. And I think we got to look at Light's drafts maybe in a different light, so to speak, the last 3 years. They're looking pretty darn good.
Yeah, a lot of ways to look at it there. You guys threw a lot out there. First, I'll say I thought Jason was great, very relaxed with the media. I didn't catch any of the stuff that Lee was talking about. Of course, he wasn't joking around, really, but I thought he was great. I probably his best performance of his career, for the people who pay attention to that stuff. I thought he was great. I'd be worried too about my words if I knew Joe Bucksfan was out there ready to pounce on and read between every line. And it's a tough spot for a general manager, but you've got to deal with that. So I'll throw that out there. But Ira, your talking point there about development, I get it. I understand it. But I'm going to say this. The Buccaneers were 9-7 with Dirk Cutter, 9-7. And everything went wrong from there, essentially. So what went wrong in 2017 and those decisions and the way you cobble together a team and work with the strengths of your coaching staff, because that's what you have to do, and you have to make some changes where necessary, it all went wrong from there. And I'll put a lot of the problems that Jason had with the team as far as the actual performance of the team, and of course he doesn't coach, I'm going to hang a lot on Jameis. Look, when a guy gets suspended and is labeled an NFL sex offender and you got stuff swirling around like that, that's a problem. You can't just pretend it's not a problem. It affects the team. Look at what they're saying about Brady now and compare that to, what we were dealing with Jameis on the flip side. It's kind of hard to lead when you're facing a suspension. It's very different. And I just think that it's a mix of the development and the coaching and picking the players. The good general managers find a way to make it all blend. And look, I give Jason an A+ now. I don't know about going back in reverse, looking in the rearview mirror. But, of course, the draft picks are the draft picks. And Vita Vea has certainly panned out, really proved himself and his character in being able to come back the way he has now. And these picks at wide receiver and the secondary is holding up. And that was the biggest gamble of this season, I thought. And they're holding up. They're in the Super Bowl. So a lot of good things. I don't know too far in the rearview mirror, Ira, but it's a great debate. We could sit here and talk about it for hours.
Well, Lee, I was narrowly speaking about the drafts of the last 2 or 3 years. Certainly, we're not going to absolve Light of some of his free agent gaffes, Lee. And there were many. And I dare say, Lee, if he doesn't make some of those moves in 2017 that he made, and wrecked the locker room, maybe the Bucs wouldn't have gone 5-11 in 2017. So that's on Light. He didn't do his homework in terms of character. That's on Light, Lee.
That's very fair. But
Lee, I look at Ronald Jones, an absolute bust, Lee. No other way to say it. 2018, different coaching staff, horrible second-round pick. Who averages less than 2 yards a carry in this league? Nobody. We've never seen that number. That is a disaster. And he got better last year. And this year, he was well on his way to 1,000 yards. He's playing well in the postseason. Vita Vea, look at Devin White's development. Lee, Carlton Davis, Alex Kappa. Coaching matters, Lee. And in that respect, we have to reassess Light's recent draft picks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, guys have been developed. There's no question about that. And the perfect example, Ronald Jones. The guy that played at Florida State, Devonta Freeman, stunk as a rookie. That just happened to be Cutter's last year in Atlanta. Cutter leaves to go to Tampa Bay. All of a sudden, Freeman blows up. Coincidence? Well, not if you did the research like Steve did. And then all of a sudden, Cutter leaves and Ronald Jones turns his career around. Coincidence? No. I love Dirk Cutter, don't get me wrong. But to suggest that for whatever reason, he or his underlings couldn't develop running backs, well, evidence is just all over the place that they could. Either couldn't or didn't want to.
Lee, I will tell you where they develop talent, and that is at Florida's Elite Restoration. Their team of mold remediation specialists and disaster care specialists cannot be beaten. They are top-notch, Florida's Elite Restoration. That's your first phone call. If you have a leak in your house, if you find mold, if you've got any kind of disaster, call them immediately, 24/7. They're going to respond and give you a free assessment, a professional assessment of what's happening in your home, and then they'll work with you with the insurance company to make sure you don't get ripped off. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Our good friends, Josh Martin and his team. Ira knows them. I know them. And again, they're a family-owned company, but not too small where they can't service the whole area by far. They work with plumbers, contractors, and they will work with you directly. Florida's Elite Restoration. That's your first phone call. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. All right, Sage, as far as Light goes, anything else that stood out to you as far as his comments about some of the team building, some of the decisions, anything else, or just, or that's it?
Well, Steve, I was a little disappointed personally because I only got to ask one question.
He slapped you around pretty good. I thought he slapped you around.
You could interpret it that way, Mr. Isbitz. I had it framed and worded the way I wanted. And with the general managers take long-range views, and all of a sudden you got Brady and things change, and now we want Gronk and we want Fournette and we want some older players, and we got to hold on to JPP and Sue. You know, guys in their 30s, look, all three of us know that year after year after year, if you were a 30-year-old free agent, 32-year-old, the Bucks weren't interested in you. They just pass. No, not interested. And it's certainly not the case during the 2020 offseason. So I tried to get Light to say, his philosophy, his attitude shifted on March 20th. He wouldn't go there, Steve. Instead, he's throwing bouquets at Greenberg and some assistant who I never heard of, who he's building up as the next Bill Polian. You know, he says we got youth everywhere. Well, Steve, is that really true? Yeah, the secondary's young. Alex Kappa's young. Tristan Wirfs is young. They got a 43-year-old, quarterback. The tight end ain't going to play much longer. They got two defensive linemen. The JPP, they got Levante David and the Ndamukong Suh. They're not that young, Steve, in some critical areas. So, I got a long answer from Light. He didn't give me the answer I wanted. But Lee, you don't mind taking a poke at the bear once in a while.
Yeah, well, he's not really a bear. He just, for him to get mad, he's really got to be upset about something.
No, he wasn't mad. But he didn't agree with my premise, Lee. He didn't agree with it.
I think they are young, Ira. I think they are young. I'm going to disagree. I'm going to say the offensive line is all under 30. You don't find that very much around the NFL completely. The running backs, you got a couple of young running backs there. And the receivers are young. You've got two Pro Bowl receivers still in their prime. And there is some young talent around on the defense outside of the secondary. Obviously, Devin White and Vita Vea as anchors as far as being very young. I think the core of the team is young. I'm going to give them that.
Well, you didn't mention the guy under center, Steve. You forgot that
one. They got an old quarterback. Old quarterback, exactly.
And their backup, like some teams, they would consider a backup as a developmental. Not many, but some would. Well, right. Gabbert's not. And what's Gabbert? 30? He's got to be 30, isn't he?
Yeah.
So that's kind of a key position where you're not young at. I know what you're saying, Steve, but I get also what Ira's saying. That there's some critical positions where they're not even close to being young.
It was just good to hear from Jason. He doesn't make public statements very often. He hasn't always been comfortable. I agree with Steve. I thought he was pretty relaxed, Lee.
Relaxed for his standards, but
yeah.
Not who's more relaxed, him or Gronkowski, for example.
I understand.
I guess I guess relaxed for light standards, it was relaxed. Before, in a general statement, nah, he would not like Arians, not like Gronkowski. Yeah, he's more relaxed than Brady, you know, because Brady doesn't say anything, in my view.
Hey, Steve, I saw the preliminary injury report. Steve, are there any concerns regarding Levante David? Could he be a problem going into this game?
I'm not worried. I mean, it's the guy's first day off, or excuse me, first week off since the bye. He played all 16 games this year. I think he'll probably be fresher than ever if you have to ask me.
You know, putting on my physician's hat, Lee, if there's any way for Winfield and Whitehead to play, they're going to be out there, Lee. They absolutely do not want to miss this game. Unless they're not cleared to play, they are going to suit up, and I expect them to play, Lee.
Early indications where they're going to play, and White seemed to throw some cold water on that on King's podcast. King asked him specifically about Brown and Winfield. And he said, well, you know, kind of him and Hod. And he said, well, they desperately want to play. If you don't desperately want to play in a Super Bowl, you're in the wrong business. Sure. And here's where you get into trouble. You know, obviously, a guy wants to play in a Super Bowl, and he's important to your team. You want to see him out there. But at the end of the day, is he able to perform? You know, if the injury is not going to, you know, hurt you that much, are you going to be 40% rather than 80%? And is the emotions going to take over? That you want to see him out there so bad, he wants to be out there so bad, and you don't use reason. You know, that's what I don't know, and none of us would know until someone actually gets on the field and tries to perform. And I hope you don't let your heart get in the way of your head. That's from a coach's standpoint. I guess that's where the trainers come in, and you rely on the trainers. You rely on your medical staff to give you an objective opinion of he can play or if he can't.
Now, Steve, one more quick point before you disagree with the next thing I say. Steve, we...
Wait a minute, Ira. First, I got to tell everybody that GM Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford is dying for you to come out on Saturday so he can give you the Joe Bucks fan discount. He can take care of you personally on Saturday, for example. Email him, call him. Reach out to him through the website, BillCurryFord.com. First-class service. He loves Bucks fans. He loves talking Bucks. And he loves helping you personally, being your insider at a vehicle dealership in the Tampa Bay area. Bill Curry Ford, the GM himself, Sean Sullivan, will take care of you anytime. Get his email address, BillCurryFord.com, or head over to the dealership a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the east side. Beautiful showroom. If you don't want to go there, they will bring you out a vehicle to test drive at your home. You don't even have to go. BillCurryFord.com. Go ahead, Sage.
Steve, we haven't gotten together since post-game, Sunday evening. You know, everybody said going into that game, the Bucks, they got to get to Aaron Rodgers. You got to get to Aaron Rodgers. Steve, not only did they get to Aaron Rodgers, dumped him on his ass five times, they demoralized him. They got to him psychologically to the point where after the game, he's talking like Svengali. Nobody knows what the hell he's talking about. I might be back. I don't control it. Steve, I told you this guy's a weird guy. He's a strange guy. He's going to win the MVP. He's a hell of a player. But he ain't no Tom Brady in the leadership department. Never has been. And I don't think he ever will be. The Bucks got to him, and they rubbed his nose in that Lambeau dirt. By the time the Klieg lights went on for the interview, he's talking gibberish, Steve. I'm still not sure what he meant.
Svengali.
Yeah, they lost, Ira. Whatever. It's the Packers. They lost. He's a great player. I don't have a problem with him, but he's been there the whole time. You know, sometimes he's a little cranky, but they've had a great run with multiple coaches. You know, I certainly wouldn't say bad things about him. I just don't care too much about him. They beat him. They knocked his head in. He didn't know what he was saying.
Why is he kind of suggesting I'm not sure they want me back? Well, what's going on there, Lee?
Well, I'm not losing sleep over a Packers quarterback. But what I think where you're going, Ira, and this is a theme of yours, and I do agree with it most, that Rodgers, he's sort of a head case, and he sort of chokes. You get on top of him, and he just melts down. You said he's not a leader, and I kind of agree with that. He's not a leader like Tom Brady, and whatever, you know, I'm not into football mysticism. One of these days, we want to get back to that. I think I have figured out what leadership is. I actually spent hours trying to figure this out. I think I found out what it is. And yeah, people, the people that watch Sands of Iwo Jima and talk about leadership and Band of Brothers. I played football, okay? You know, I only played high school football. My coach played in the NFL. So I think he had a, you know, he played for John Madden and Tom Landry. I think he knew what he was doing. So, but anyway, to get off track here, Rodgers had a damn good game, especially the second half. If you want to, you know, nitpick and say he should have ran on third down when he threw an incompletion. I don't know if he would have outran Devin White. I don't think so. But I thought he played great. But I know where you're getting at, Ira, that he's goofball and he, you know, he gets down on himself and he chokes. I don't know that he choked. And he has choked in playoff games, specifically at home, specifically when they were a top seed. But I don't think that game was on him. I think that game was on Mike Patton, way overrated defensive coach. And I want to say LaFleur, but you know what? He did the Bill Walsh philosophy. He was not going to pass up on points. But anyway, let's talk about the Bucs. Let's talk about the Bucs. I'm still geeked about them beating the Packers. You know, we don't think the Bucs have a strong defense. Now, they've been playing well. And been
you sound like Mad Dog Russo over there, DeKemper.
2 weeks ago, would you have said the Bucs have a top 10 defense?
I told Russo the defense was okay. That's what I told him. Okay.
Yeah, average, which means average. It's nothing to write home about. Not necessarily going to win you games. It's average. It's okay. Well, Mike Sando of The Athletic did some research, and no team, and I don't have the specifics. I didn't write them down, but I have it saved on my computer. There's only one team in the NFL that played more top five offenses than the Bucs.
Nice.
So the Bucs were going up against the cream of the crop most of the time. And I'll say the New Orleans game, they never got blown out. You know, they lost to the Chiefs by 3. They lost to the Rams by 3, if I remember correctly. So what Sando's basically trying to say is, don't overlook the Bucs defense. They've been playing damn good, very good offenses. So don't let the numbers skewer you or screw up your eyesight, you know, screw up your vision. I'm trying to think of the right cliche, but at any rate, the Bucs are doing quite well. Their numbers may suggest otherwise, but look who they played. Basically,
you know,
wait a minute. To answer Lee's question, yeah, I would have definitely said the Bucs had a top 10 defense. I don't know who people can.
I never would have.
Well, they are top 10 points allowed, yards, best against the run. A very average at best in the secondary, but I don't know who you're comparing them to. I mean, they had games this year where the defense won the games, and they've got talent. They got playmakers that a lot of teams don't have. So I would definitely put them as a top third in the league defense, even after they struggled with Taylor Heinicke, a mobile quarterback, kind of a weird situation that was bad coaching. Yeah, you know, I would have said that, yeah, definitely Bucs have been top 10, top 8 all year, really.
Even after a backup XFL guy sliced him to death, or damn near sliced him to death, you would have said that was a top defense? Seriously?
Yeah, that's why I thought they were going to beat the Saints and the Packers, definitely.
Well, I got to say,
Steve, we got to put out an APB. That anyone outside of you that the Bucs had a good defense after a backup XFL quarterback just ran rings around them. We got to put out all points full.
Glee, body of work. And look, Steve, I got to say, the last 2 weeks against the Saints and then the number one scoring offense in the league, Green Bay, the Buck defense played very well. I got to say that. Hey, guys, one more point that Jason Light mentioned, and I think Arians has talked about this. In retrospect, gentlemen, and we buried them after this game, and they deserved it. They gave the game away to an inferior opponent. That's what the old Bucs used to do as a habit. Lose games they had no business losing. And, Steve, we're talking about Soldier Field, national television, playing a Pop Gun Bears offense, and they find a way to lose the game. Penalties, turnovers, sloppy, Brady not very good. And Jason Light went out of his way to say, hey, you know, Coach Arians and I, we were talking about that Chicago game. I'm still pissed off. And Arians said, you know what, Jason? Looking back, probably the best thing that could have happened to us. It was a wake-up call, Steve. Too sloppy, too undisciplined. They weren't going to get to where they needed to go unless they clean their act up. And, Steve, here they are ready to play for the Vince Lombardi Trophy.
Yeah, it was a tough game. They were riding a 3-game winning streak at the time. And they knew the Bears weren't that great, and they went in there and they choked it away. And the classic ending was, of course, Tom Brady forgetting what down it was Nobody wants to talk about that now. But I think what Light was starting to imply, Ira, was that everybody realized that, you know, we all have to be our best. Even Tom Brady can make a mistake like that at the end of the game. And just the whole team fell apart, needed to come back together as a whole. And Ryan Jensen talked about that as well a little bit today on or earlier this week on one of his interviews. You know, they came back, they won three in a row after that. And then later it fell apart, you know, and then they bounced back. But I was surprised that Light was focused on that Bears game. But, you know, they know what the feeling was within the team and the turning points. And that certainly was an important game for them. Ira, Lee, I wanted to get your opinion on this because we talked about this so much when Bruce Arians took over. And then at other times as well, Arians on local radio said that, hell yeah, he's coming back next year no matter what. And he's loving coaching. He wants two rings and he's in. So, you know what? We're going to get 3 years of Arians, maybe four. What are your thoughts on that?
Right off the bat, Lee, the first thing that strikes me is he makes it as a guarantee. But Lee, I can think of a scenario that immediately would have Bruce Arians pondering retirement. Immediately. I'm not talking about a health issue. Lee, it's very simple. Tom Brady hangs it up, and Bruce Arians looks at the landscape and says, I'm out of here. My job is done. Well, let's assume they win the Super Bowl. Let's hope. I don't think Brady will walk off into the sunset. But what if he does, Lee? What if he does? Now you're Bruce Arians. I could see Arians wrapping it up right then and there.
I was going to agree with you completely. And then while you were, you know, giving me the answer or your thoughts, it just, you know, hit me in the head that, you know, the quarterback movement in the league this year is going to be robust. It's going to be a lot of quarterbacks moving. And who were we speaking of just a little bit ago on this very podcast, who I think actually might be a bad move to pick him up? Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Arians like, man, we get another guy like Aaron Rodgers. By the way, his record in warm weather cities, not good. So I would be hesitant about Rodgers for that reason alone. That, and as you pointed out, Ira, he's a little bit of a squirrely dude. But maybe Aaron's like, wow, you know, I get to work with Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, I could see an old coach getting excited about that. And here we go. We could do this just like Brady. Or, you know, there's other quarterbacks that might be available. But it looks like, you know, Deshaun Watson. You know, it looks like Houston might move him. But I'm leery about all this Deshaun Watson talk because he hasn't waived his no trade clause. Until that happens, this is all hot air. But there's going to be a lot of quarterbacks on the move this year. So maybe Arians, okay, to take your point, Brady hangs it up, which I don't expect, but let's say Brady does. His wife tells him, you know, this is it. You're done. Football's over with. Either that or I'm getting a divorce, which she threatened to do. Brady talked about it on Stern's show. She threatened to do that if you went to OTAs. Now other players are probably going to use the same excuse. Oh, I can't go to OTAs, coach. My wife's going to divorce me. You know, let's say that does happen, hypothetically. And all of a sudden, you're in the quarterback market. You trade up and you go get this BYU quarterback who's a hot shot. Do you get Justin Fields? I mean, do you make a play for Deshaun Watson? Do you try to sign Rodgers? I mean, yes, I agree. Arians might say, to hell with it. I'm done. Brady's done. I'm done. We got a Super Bowl ring. Let me move and play golf and drink whiskey, as Steve wrote. Let me drink whiskey the rest of my life and be with my family. However, a new quarterback like a Rodgers or a Watson, chance to work with them, maybe that reinvigorates Arians. Maybe he stays because of that. I don't know. But I see where you're going, Ira. But it looks like the Bucs, if that did happen and Brady hung them up, looks like the Bucs would have several options to get a new quarterback.
Well, Steve, I'll say two things. One, Deshaun Watson, Rodgers, God bless them. Steve, in my opinion, they're not Brady. They're not Brady in terms of what Arians wants from a leadership perspective. But, you know, Steve, the talk is moot because as far as we know, we don't have any reason to believe that Tom Brady is not coming back for the 2021 season. And, Steve, I'm not sure that's going to be his last season.
Well, it sure seems like he's coming back. I mean, just the mere fact that Gronk is saying that he wants to come back and play for the Bucs, I don't think he would say that if he thought Brady was leaving. That wouldn't make any sense. He'd want to test free agency. And, you know, Brady signed the 2-year deal. He's healthy. He's said previously that he wants to play until 45. He said that many times. And there was a report from Jeff Darlington, who has a pipeline to Brady's camp and has been very accurate on all things Brady, and says that it may even go beyond that, and that his family is extremely happy in Tampa. So, look, it's gone perfectly for him. You know, he's obviously very good. You know, he was very good last year. He's even better this year. He's got an offensive line. And I bet you if he puts his foot down and says, look, you know, let's draft a center with the last pick of the first round, you know, they'll do whatever he wants. So I don't know why he would want to walk away. And my gut tells me Team Glazer is going to step in here and say, look, let's sign Tom Brady to a fat contract in 2022. If he doesn't play, we get our money back. But I have a feeling they're going to want to try to cement him in, because the longer he stays, the better it is for the organization on about 75 different levels.
And Lee, that goes for whether the Bucks win this game or not. If they don't win, the Glazer appetite would not decrease, because they would say, look how close we came. You know, we had a couple more players. We're right there. So it doesn't matter, Lee, in that respect, whether the Glazers would be so interested in bringing Brady back. I don't think it matters. They want Brady back. They've seen firsthand the difference that he makes.
Well, I remember when Chucky won the Super Bowl. And by the way, Ira, these people, it drives me nuts. These people say Chucky won with Dungy's team. Well, number one, why didn't Dungy win with his own team? That's nobody answers that. Number two, if Brady wins the Super Bowl, did Brady win with Jameis' team? I'm just curious.
Come on. We're not going to hear these stupid arguments.
So anyway, I remember when Chucky won the Super Bowl, when he got the Bucks over the hump, he was the golden boy. He could do no wrong. And with that newfound power, he got rid of Richie McKay, brought in Bruce Almighty. He ran the show.
He did.
I could see the same thing happen. If Brady and the Bucks win the Super Bowl, basically whatever Brady wants, Brady's going to get. Am I off base saying that?
I don't think you're too far off base. Brady's clout is immense, Steve, at one Buccaneer place. And who's to argue with the results, Steven?
Well, it's going to be interesting, because his clout can't supersede the salary cap. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see how that plays out, Ira. The more I watch this, the more I think about it. I bet you Brady's going to want Leonard Fournette to come back, because they can't guarantee him anybody else. Who are they going to get who can catch the ball on third down, be a third down back if they need it? And one little stat, Ira, I know I've used this a few times on the website. I know you read every word on JoeBucksFan.com, so I'm sure you've seen it. But just in case you haven't, Sage, Leonard Fournette, in the games that he's carried 10 or more times, the Bucks are 7-0, and he has 7 touchdowns and 30 receptions. Now, I'm sure that's not lost on Tom Brady, that whenever playoff Lenny gets the ball going and and gets in a little rhythm and they give him the ball, the Bucks are undefeated. So I'm curious, because Fournette's going to cost some money, and who knows how that'll go. But I think Brady will make a lot of those calls, or at least have a heavy hand in sitting down with Jason Light about the future of the roster.
I think you'd back me up on this, Lee. Brady might want Fournette, and Brady might plead for Fournette. But in the end, Fournette and his agent are going to make the call, Lee. And if there's more money on the table, which you would think there would be, Lee, from one of the 31 other teams, rather than the Bucks, where he's clearly a number two to Ronald Jones at this point, I think it's fair to say, Lee, if I'm Fournette and I'm getting a decent offer to be the number one somewhere else, isn't he going to take it, Lee?
He probably will, but Steve makes a hell of a point, and I'll expand on that in a second. First off, I don't know that Leonard Fournette's clearly number two. He's a starting running back. I don't know how that's clearly number two. He may be a number two, but he's a starting running back. And then the stats that Steve pointed out, don't think for a second Arians and Light don't know that. So I don't know if he's clearly number two. Having said that, that's not a slam at Ronald Jones. That's not. I'm not trying to slam Ronald Jones. But clearly a number two when he's starting, I don't know if I can go there. But to expand on Steve's point about free agent, obviously it seems like Fournette's happy. He's winning. Seems like he's happy. He's had a come-to-Jesus moment with Arians of some sort. He's talking about how he's grown. I don't think he's unhappy. But to Steve's point, and I've said this several times, I don't think, and Ndamukong Suh is here if Jameis is here. I don't think JPP is here if Jameis is here. I know Gronk's not here if Jameis is here. I know Leonard Fournette's not here if Jameis is here.
And Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown's another one, although, you know, he's not had a huge impact yet. He's almost like icing on a cake, so to speak. If the Bucs win a Super Bowl and Brady's here, you don't think free agents are going to want to come here? You know, free agents went to hell on earth called Boston's Winners to put up with Belichick because they were chasing the ring. Well, people like Arians. This is awesome weather. You got Brady. It's a Super Bowl champion. You don't think the Bucs and Arians are going to have the pick of the litter when it comes to free agents at a decent price? They'll want to come here. So I think Steve has made a hell of a point there. It's not just Fournette. It's all the other options that will be out there in the free agent market in, 6 weeks? Of course, when you talk about free agents, you talk about salary cap. Bill Huber, who's a Packers beat guy, he works for one of these SI.com sites. He apparently, and this is just a couple days ago, he published a story where he talked to a bunch of agents. And who do agents talk to? They talk to GMs. He said it's almost a consensus among the agents that he's spoken with, and he emphasized with multiple agents, they don't believe the salary cap's going to drop.
I've been saying that, Lee.
One of the agents he talked to said, you think Jerry Jones wants to get rid of 7 or 8 starters?
It would be a chaotic situation for the NFL. You wouldn't believe some of the big names that would be released in that case.
Yeah, Sage, guys, the teams invest so much money into building these rosters. If they have the power, which they do, why would they want to, you know, blow them up just to rebuild them again? It's like, you know, they're in charge. The owners are in charge. I don't think they have any interest in doing that. Plus, the ratings have been so good. TV contracts are going to be so incredible. The gear is everywhere. The nation's coming together. Yep. A lot of
17-game season next year.
Yeah.
They added playoffs this year, and they buku eyeballs. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of optimism everywhere. Ira, this was the money quote of the week. Arians is on with the Rich Eisen show. And
is there an interview request that Arians turns down, Stephen?
Not too many this week. But first, Ira, I want to make sure that everybody knows that there's going to be one hell of a Super Bowl party at Big Storm Brewery in Clearwater. They're taking reservations right now, so you can get a seat at the bar or a seat at one of the tables in the gorgeous outdoor 3,000 square foot, fully covered, brand new modern area that they have there. So much fun. We were there all season long. And, of course, indoors as well. You got to have a seat. It's not some sort of standing room only packed situation. Nicely distanced. Big Storm Brewery. You want to follow them on Facebook. All the information is there. And they have tap rooms in Odessa. Of course, you can watch the Super Bowl there. Big Storm Beer is Florida's best craft beer. Hands down. We love it. We drink it. Promosa, Tropic Pressure, Florida Ale. Now they call it Tropic Pressure Golden Ale. The Wavemaker Amber Ale, which is the original. So many great beers. Get to BigStormBrewery.com. Awesome food as well. But if you want to watch the Super Bowl in a really fun environment with a lot of Bucks fans, outdoors, open air but covered, it is so cool there. Follow Big Storm Brewery on Facebook, and you can place your reservations and get a table. It's going to be great. And so he's on with Rich Eisen show, and he says, I can't say enough about the job Leftwich has done. He says, I mean, it's just remarkable. You know, Tom is such a great player, but he left that system after 20 years. He had a lot to learn. Byron's been the guy in the middle doing all the grunt work and the hard work. People give me way too much credit because I don't do shit, really. He does it all. Leftwich calls the plays. I'm really upset he didn't get a head coaching interview. So that's the money quote, Ira. I don't do shit, really. And Arians seemed awfully sincere when he was saying that. And he broke down that the play call itself from to Scotty Miller was a Byron Leftwich call. And as far as the specific play, once Arians said, you know, let's go for it. And they all said, let's go. He called the shot and he felt he had it. And I don't know, Ira, I think I believe Arians when he says that. And he said something else in another interview that Leftwich sees the whole game, the defense and the full throttle of the entire game from a different kind of view, a head coach kind of view. And he was chatting about at the time about Bowles and Leftwich, but he didn't say that about Bowles. And it made me think, Ira, that if Arians had to name a successor down the road, if they asked him, who do you want to take over the team, it would be Leftwich over Bowles.
Lee, let's not turn this podcast into a 60-minute bouquet for Byron Leftwich. We're not going to do that, Lee. That is a classic Arians quote that I don't do diddly. It's all Leftwich. Now, Lee, that doesn't mean to suggest that Arians doesn't give Leftwich a lot of leeway with this offense. Of course, you've got the Brady factor in there too, Lee. So it's tough to determine exactly who's shaping these offensive game plans. But I think Arians does leave Leftwich pretty much alone on game day. Lee, I don't think he's fibbing about that. I think the reason that he talks up Leftwich so much with so much passion, this is why. Because nobody questions that Bowles is making all the big decisions on the other side of the football.
Yeah,
nobody questions it. Yeah, nobody questions it. You know, it's not Kevin Ross and it's not the linebacker coach. It's Bowles. On the offense, it's a little murky, Lee. So if you're pushing your guys, Bowles and Leftwich, for interviews and ultimately a head coaching job, you got to clear up, you know, how about a little clarity about what the heck Leftwich is doing? And I don't blame Arians for saying what he's saying. I think to a degree it's true, but I think he's taking it to another level, Lee, that he doesn't do anything around town if that's true. And on the Glazers, I go, oh, Jason, we got a problem here. But Lee, my point is Bowles runs unopposed on that side of the ball, and Leftwich doesn't. Everybody knows Arians' background. You got the Brady factor. And I think Arians feels it's incumbent on him in terms of clarifying exactly what Leftwich is doing, that he gives him almost all the credit. I think that's what it's about, Lee.
Yeah, I think he's trying to build up Leftwich to try to get him a job interview or a job period. I don't blame him for that. But if Arians was really a figurehead like he claims, then why is he on a headset during game? I'll just say it right there. And then there's a guy that is a Brady intimate, and he's no longer working in the NFL, but has a very popular podcast. He claims Leftwich has virtually no say. It's Brady and Arians. Of course, he's on the outside looking in, but he is a Brady intimate. Who knows what Brady's telling him? But it's Michael Lombardi. He claims that Leftwich virtually has no say. It's Arians and Brady. So, you know, you don't know what to believe. But I agree with you. I'd like to have a little clarity on the delegation of authority.
Steve, it does seem at times that, and especially when Arians has a national audience like a Rich Eisen, that he does go out of his way, Steve, to build up the resume of one Byron Leftwich, who I don't think any Buck fan can say at this point has done a lousy job. You certainly can't make that assertion with a team on the brink of hoisting the Vince Lombardi trophy. But sometimes there's a little hyperbole to what Arians is saying regarding Byron Leftwich.
I understand the hyperbolic nature of it all, but I kind of believed it. Listening in the moment, listening live, I kind of bought it, and I don't think the Glazers, you mentioned the Glazers, Ira, I don't think they would care if Arians is CEO, head coach, and is knocking off early and having a cocktail. As long as they're winning, they'll give him five more contracts. They don't care. But, you know, we talk about what's really going on in the organization, and that really often you never really know. Even when they tell you, you never really know. We've talked on this podcast, Ira, about the signing of Shaq Barrett, and you called that a Todd Bowles move and that big move from a couple of years ago. I had asked Jason Light off to the side, you know, offline regarding one of his favorite moves in the building of this roster. You know, what's one of his all-time favorites, if not the favorite, outside of signing Tom Brady. And he told me that signing Shaq Barrett was that move because 2 years before they signed Shaq Barrett, his pro scouts, multiple scouts and multiple executives were needling him, sign this guy, sign this guy, sign this guy. and he didn't do it. And then they slapped a second round tender on him when he was a restricted free agent, and Light could have dumped a second rounder to get Shaq Barrett, and he still didn't do it. And then they came around again. You got to sign this guy. He's coming up. And he signed him, and here's Shaq. So, you know, we're sitting here speculating that, you know, Bowles is heavy-handed in this, and I'm sure Bowles had to look at him, but, you know, that's sort of the backstory of Shaq Barrett. And, you know, it you never really know what's going on in an organization.
I just think, Lee, that it's more than a coincidence that Shaq Barrett becomes a Buccaneer 2 months after Todd Bowles is hired as the defensive coordinator. Yeah, the Bucs might have had an interest in Shaq Barrett, but Lee, the fact remains they didn't act on it for 2 years, and they didn't know if Denver was going to keep Barrett, so maybe they'd never get their hands on this guy. If Denver realized what the heck they had, which the Broncos screwed up, but Light didn't know that he was going to get another shot, and then all of a sudden when he did, here comes Todd Bowles giving his stamp of approval. And I just think Bowles was a central figure.
We knew the pass rush for the Bucs, even with JPP, was substandard. I mean, before JPP came, and by the way, you traded a third-round pick for JPP, that was a steal. That was an absolute steal. You know, my gosh, Dave Gettleman, what do you think? But thank you for being dumb and trading JPP for a third-round pick. If anybody thinks that Light got taken, do your research on Google and pull up all the Bucs' third-round picks in the history of their franchise and try to tell me that was not a good trade. You almost wonder if Arians and or Bowles, before they agreed to take the job, they said, Jason, you got to get some pass rushers in here. You have to. We can't just rely on JPP. You got to get someone else in here. And lo and behold, they did. But you have to wonder if that was part of the negotiations.
You know, at the time, if we go back to the beginning of 2019, Carl Nassib was the starter on the left side. He was coming off a good year, and Bowles was very vocal how much he really liked Nassib and that they seemed to click. And if you remember, Nassib was voted team captain. Shockingly, he was a team captain in 2019, and Shaq played in the fourth preseason game. He was an afterthought kind of guy, and he exploded quickly, and the rest is history. But you know, I don't know. I can't say that Bowles is banging the table here for Shaq Barrett, but this is the whole point, is that you never really know what's going on behind closed doors.
By the way, with Nassib, Raiders fans are killing Mayock for that signing. Apparently he's done nothing. I don't know that, but, you know, why would you kill a guy if he had a good signing?
I got a feeling he got hurt this year.
Is that right? Okay, obviously I don't follow. I'm too busy covering the Bucks to cover the Raiders in and out, but I've been reading.
Nassib played a ton. I watched a lot of their games. Yeah, as you guys know, I watch all these condensed games. He played a ton. I don't think he was hurt, but he only had like 2 or 3 sacks. So
Raiders fans are killing Mayock. They think it was a bad sign.
So he just didn't get it done. Considering, you know, the Bucks weren't paying him much. The Raiders are paying him more like $8-9 million. Ira. Oof. You know, the hype train is on. The last thing we'll get to here, because I want to know if you're concerned in any way. Now, your column, most recent one, is about sort of attacking the Chiefs, you know, strategy and how to beat them and what you got to do. It was essentially the core of it. Everybody can read it at joebucksfan.com. And, of course, it's presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's very first family of Ford. BillCurryFord.com is where you can start shopping 24/7. Bill Curry, C-U-R-R-I-E, Sage, Carlton Davis was on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and they asked him about how do you feel that you need, what do you need to do to stop the Chiefs? Let me read this to you, because I did a double take because I thought he was being so revealing. It was almost like he was reading too much or revealing too much, but then I realized, you know, it's early in the week. He probably doesn't even have any kind of game plan yet, so he's just talking off the top of his head. But this was kind of telling, Sage. Here we go. So Carlton Davis proceeds to say that I think one of the first things we're going to have to do is stop the deep ball and not allow them to get balls over the top of our heads. Just kind of play our coverage top down, you know, make them drive the field on us, make them throw those check downs and not allow them to have those explosive plays that lets their offense get rolling. And to me, that screamed, hey, we got to play soft zone, back up off these guys. And that's how the Bucks seem to lose games and get carved up. And I don't know if that's the best way to go about facing the Chiefs, Ira. What do you think?
Well, Lee, we all remember the first quarter of that Week 12 matchup. And that was a man against boys, Lee. And I'm not blaming Carlton Davis, Lee. I just thought the Bulls had a very pedestrian game plan that blew up in his face. I don't care if it's Ramsey, Patrick Peterson in his prime, Lee. I mean, Tyreek Hill's a handful, Lee. He's a handful if you don't have deep help. So certainly the Bucks can't do the same thing they did at the beginning of that game. They can't. We've proven that. So soft zone, try to make them go 11 plays, 75 yards. Well, that sounds good, Lee, but Travis Kelce finds the soft spots in any zone created by man, and so he'll kill you 12 yards at a time, Lee. I don't think Davis has given us anything we should be using. I think Bowles is in his laboratory, and I think the key is mixing up the coverages and not letting Mahomes know what the heck you're doing pre-snap. If he knows what you're doing, he's too good, Lee. He's too good. Yeah, the pass rush will be strong. You know, the Chiefs are playing with some backup tackles. I think that heavily favors the Bucks in the trenches. But having said that, Mahomes is tough to sack. You can't let him outside, so you got to watch what kind of angle you take around the edges. Otherwise, he puts too much pressure on you. So it's very complex, Lee. People will look at Mahomes for 3 years. They can't stop him, Lee. They can't stop him. Buffalo played him early in the year. Buffalo played him last week. He still carved them up. Did the same things. And, you know, Buffalo knows what they're doing on defense. Leslie Frazier, Lee, we remember him from the Buccaneer days. He's a respected defensive mind, Lee. Say what you want. And he had no answers. Bull went crazy. Kelce went crazy. You know, so, but the only thing we know for sure, Lee, is that Carlton Davis will not be in man-to-man coverage with no safety help. That cannot happen.
I always go to the nugget that Steve dug up about Bill Cowher. He said, how you defend the Chiefs is what Todd Bowles did the last three quarters of the game they played against the Bucks. Not the first quarter, but the last three. You know, the Bucks didn't have Vita Vea when they played the Chiefs the last time. And Vita Vea, I don't think it's a coincidence whatsoever that all of a sudden JPP and Shaq Barrett came out of hibernation, had no sacks for the last five games. All of a sudden, they completely blow up against the Packers. Vita Vea is on the field. Number two, Vita Vea was blowing up Corey Linsley. Corey Linsley is a Pro Bowler, good center. He was blowing this guy up. And with the Chiefs, looks like you said, they're going to be down two starting tackles. And if Vita Vea has any kind of a game like he did against the Packers, those tackles aren't going to get any kind of help at all. They're going to get no help. You know, I don't mean to get ahead of myself. I really like the Bucks' chances in this game. I really do. Now, Jamal Dean also did not play against the Chiefs. Am I correct? There's another guy that didn't play that's probably going to play. Now, hopefully Winfield's out there. I'm not that worried about the Bucks' defense this time around. Do I expect Kansas City to score 25, 30 points? Yeah, but that's what they do all the time. It just means the Bucks, like they did against the Packers, show up when they needed to show up, and the offense puts enough points on the board. I think the Bucks will be okay. Is there cause for concern? You darn right. Is there cause for respect? Absolutely, but I'm not sweating it like I was sweating the Packers and the Saints. I'm not sweating this.
Steve, the best news for Carlton Davis is JPP and Shaq Barrett coming around the corner on a couple of backup tackles. That's the best news of all for Carlton Davis.
Vita Vea ended up with 33 snaps, way over the 20.
Oh, wow.
Way over the 20 limit that Arians had talked about. So, you know, amazing that his stamina was as good as it was. They just let him keep rolling, and obviously he was cleared to play, so he's healthy. He should be flying in that Super Bowl. Ira, Tyreek Hill, I'll throw this out at you, and then you can take us out of this podcast, Sage. Tyreek Hill, he had 12 games this year with less than 100 yards. He only had 12 games, the regular season, under under 100 yards. He's not a Superman, a dangerous player, but gosh, you know, he's not going to throw 269 yards again receiving on the Bucs. He's not going to do that on anybody. It was an insane day, a historic day, but I'm just not that concerned.
I'm disagreeing with you on that one, Stevie. I believe he scored 15 touchdowns. Now, Devontae Adams scored 18. He did a job on a good Buffalo defense last week. He killed them. Big play after big play. They couldn't stop him. He's the fastest guy on cleats that I've seen since Deion Sanders, and he might be number one. And I don't care what Scotty Miller says. Scotty Miller says he's faster than Tyreek Hill. You know why he says that to Kemper? Because he doesn't have to cover Tyreek Hill. That's why.
I got to ask you these two questions before we leave. Light on Peter King's podcast. He was trying to get across to the listeners and the viewers. He's just a regular guy. You know, he's just like everybody else. When he comes home, the dog's excited to see him. He's got to do this. He's got to do that. He makes it sound like, I'm an NFL general manager. I'm a regular guy. To emphasize that point, when he was running the draft from his home because, you know, the pandemic, everything was, all the NFL offices were shut down. And, you know, he doesn't have a bachelor pad like Cliff Kingsbury, which that was one of the greatest pictures of all times. And he didn't have his dog doing his draft like Belichick did. But he does have a dog. And he said after he drafted Wirfs, and he really wanted Wirfs, that was his goal, and that it's a good thing that Lynch traded with him because people were having some stiff offers to Lynch to get that same pick. And fortunately, Light offered enough to get the pick. He got Wirfs, and he said, yeah, you know, I had a little celebration with my family. Then I went into the kitchen, and I saw my dog had an accident. And then after I cleaned that up, I had to load the dishwasher. And that raises two questions for me, Ira. Number one, what happened that you had to load the dishwasher immediately after cleaning up after the dog? Number two, why was Austin Seferian Jenkins in your kitchen?
Lee, I'm going to say this. And Steve, even you, who live and breathe to disagree with the sage, you're going to have to nod your head in agreement. I think everything Light said about himself is true. The man likes his beer. He's not getting, champagne at $600 a bottle. He's a family guy. We see him all during training camp with the kids when practice ends. It's genuine. And say what you want about Jason Light. He's got those strong Midwestern values. That's where he was brought up. I've met his father, like son. From that perspective, I think Light is a very genuine person. He'd be a great neighbor. Gentlemen, we're going to get into it much more deeply in upcoming podcasts, but I think Lee's making some strong points about the Bucs. They're underdogs because they're playing the defending NFL champs, but they've won 7 in a row. It's a franchise record. The 2002 Bucs did not win 7 in a row. This team has, and I think this dream season, there's only one way for it to end, with the dream that we can all grab a part of. So keep listening, guys. We got more to come.
Thanks for listening to the Ira Kaufman podcast. Being one of the many, many thousands who listen each week, we really are so appreciative of the numbers and the growth of the podcast. Exciting times for Bucs fans. And of course, the podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. Get to BillCurryFord.com. And our thanks to Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast, and to Florida's Elite Restoration. Your first call if you have any kind of disaster, mold, or otherwise in your home, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. We'll see you next week.